Hi, people of First Lutheran. How are you? I've missed you, and I've missed Deborah. I hope you're here today. Hi, Deborah, and I hope that I can. I hope that I can make you proud. I have thought about what I wanted to talk about today, and I think that I'm being led to talk to you about social justice. And I would like to specifically talk about it in the midst of a pandemic. We've come this morning together as people of God to live generously. You know, I love that slogan, right? And I think that we can live generously and be a force for healing in our world. We're gathered together this morning to ask the Lord's blessing. And I humbly share with you today thoughts from many learned women and men who are far better qualified to share these thoughts with you than I. But I will do my best. Again, as I said, I want to talk about the pandemic specifically as it relates to social injustice. This crisis reveals and shines a light on inequities that are caused by the pandemic, but inequities that existed for generations before in our society, and it will show how the pandemic has only made them worse. In the months that we've been following public health orders to shelter in place and in various stages of coming back out into the community and going back in, depending on where you live, the disruptions in our lives have been stressful at best and often sometimes heartbreaking. Anxiety and fear are widespread. Some people say that COVID-19 has shown that we're all alike, or that we're all the same. And sure, it's true that we're all human. And we all feel frustration and we all are worried and we can all get sick. But the real truth of the matter is that COVID-19 has shown us that we may all be created equal, but we do not enjoy equal access to a safe way of life. The damages of this crisis lands more heavily on those whose lives were already in danger. The haves versus the have-nots. My sister has not left her house in 6 months. She's not let me come to see her. My sister's 87 years old, and I don't know how much longer that I'm going to have to see her. She's living in fear. She's scared. Yet I know that she's housed in a house with heat and hot water, and it's clean, and she's fed, and she's safe, and she has her groceries delivered, and she has friends in town that if, God forbid, something happened, they could be there in a moment. She has a laundry room so she could do her clothes, and she doesn't have to worry about having dirty clothes. She doesn't have to depend on a crowded laundromat to go to make sure that she has clean laundry. But many of our families that you and I have worked with and who have served over these 8 years we've been together, they didn't even have enough money to buy groceries before the pandemic. They still have to find a way to do what they have to do in an unsafe time and an unsafe world. The pandemic really reveals the inequities in our society. But it also makes them worse. In my own pandemic isolation, and I think some of you may be able to relate to this, my isolation is minimal compared to most. What I grieve the most is human interaction, socialization. You know me. I love to socialize. You know that. And I want to kiss my grandbabies and I want to hug them. And when there's a little baby going down the street, I want to get in its face and I want to pinch its little cheeks and I want to hug people that I love and I know I can't. And that's a small price to pay to make sure that we all stay healthy and we all stay safe. And I'm willing to pay that price. I really want to go see my friend, my best friend since grammar school, who lives in Florida and who is sitting at her husband's bedside because he's at the end of his life. And I'd like to be able to go with my husband to his 5-hour-long chemotherapy treatments, but I know I can't. But that pales in comparison to the loss that others feel. My routine and rhythms are out of whack, and I'm getting a little bit anxious, and I want to get out. I want to escape. I want to get out of town. I want to get out of the country. Where would I go? Everybody's in a state of quarantine. You just can't escape. My usual privilege doesn't count for much right now. And this makes me think a little bit of all the people who can't escape their situations. Even before the pandemic, right? So those refugees that were fleeing civil wars, violence in the streets, families whose the only thing they did wrong was to sit on their front porch and a stray bullet killed their child. It's a horrible, horrible situation to be in. But even worse, they are now facing more dangers. Journalists and human rights activists are trying to share what's going on, and it's being suppressed by corrupt dictators everywhere in this country, in our country. People are living in the streets. They're living there year-round. We know that to be true, right? We've seen it ourselves, right, in our own neighborhood. The pandemic makes it harder for us to get free and find safety. Whether it's that I can't just take off for a couple of days, or that a mom can't feed her kids, mine pales in comparison. It's not a new condition for the families that we serve. In doing some research for this today, I found a sermon from C.S. Lewis back in the late 1930s, just before England entered World War II. The name of his sermon was Lessons in Wartime, and I'm going to read it because I want to make sure I get it right. He said, "War is not an interruption of normal life, because life is never normal. In a war, in a pandemic, or at any other time, human life is always precarious." He said the human family lives always near the edge of a precipice, a cliff. Well, I think some of us live an awful lot closer to the edge of that cliff than others. And so this is what it means to be marginalized, right? To be left out or to be kept out on the margins of society, where we don't have safety, where there's no net. Life is more precarious for some, and it's more privileged for others. Social inequities and racial injustice are built into our system. I recently read a book, The Color of Law. I highly recommend it. It changed the way I look at the work that we have to do to create a more just world. That's all I'll say. I'll just suggest that you read it. So one example, you may know this. I didn't, and shame on me that I didn't, but that the U.S. incarcerates a higher percentage of our citizens than any other industrialized democracy. In our crowded prisons and jails today, in the midst of a pandemic, there are not enough PPEs to go around, and so our guards and our inmates and our civilian employees are all at a higher risk. It's immoral. There's something wrong with that we're forcing that situation. But remember, there were a lot of things that happened before the pandemic that brought us to that point. For sure, our system disproportionately hits persons of color and persons with limited economic opportunity. And so very often, an accused person will accept a guilty plea in exchange for a shorter sentence just to get it over with. And very often they're nonviolent offenses. And so what happens is a generational story perpetuates. And who wins? Nobody wins. We all lose. The mom that's left behind, the dad that's left behind, the child that's left behind, the community that's left behind. There are economic losses. There are emotional losses. The separation and the anxiety create other issues. There is a better way. There is a better way. And I know that as people of God, we can find that. I know we can. Another example, millions of people have lost their job in the midst of this pandemic, including many that you and I know and love. It's a devastating blow, and they have to find another job. But when they find that next job, they are making the choice to put themselves in an unsafe situation in order to feed their families. I know we can do better. I know we can. In these trying times, we have to be very grateful for all of our essential workers, workers in food service, workers in agriculture. They were always essential, right? It's how we got to eat. It's how we got to enjoy those things that we look forward to, like going out to dinner and things like that. But now things are even more dangerous for our families, more dangerous for their families. And the federal government is trying to help. They've been providing some financial relief to us. It was a while ago, and you know, hopefully we'll see some more assistance. And they've also been trying to help those business owners, in some cases millionaires, in order to help them out as well. And I don't make a judgment about that. I just say that as a fact. But here's the thing. Those essential workers, those workers that we just said are critical to our way of life, many of them are undocumented, and they're not getting any help. And they're losing their jobs, and they're probably not getting paid as much as the law requires them to be paid. We can do better. I know we can. I know we can. Even before COVID-19, few undocumented workers had health coverage. And so think about that scenario and think about it in terms of Homeland Security. So you're undocumented. You get sick. Turns out that it's COVID. You don't go to the doctor because you don't have health insurance and you can't afford to go. But even if you could figure out how to pay for it, if you go, would you get deported? And so you try to tough it out. But then your coworkers get infected and they infect their families and their families infect the families that they're working for. So it's common sense. It's a matter of Homeland Security to make sure that everyone that lives and works in our country, regardless of how they got there, have basic needs met, including health insurance. So there are some people who say that, you know, hey, don't let this crisis go to waste. People are energized now. Take advantage of all the attention on this crisis and take advantage of the energy that's there and let's mobilize. Lift up our voices and push our government, push our corporate leaders, push them to address these injustices that the pandemic has brought to light. I want to be careful that we don't blame the pandemic for the injustices. The pandemic exacerbated them, and they've shown a very bright light on them. It's shown a very bright light on them, but it did not cause them. They existed because of the system, of the lack of social justice that exists within the system. So even in our anxiety and our grief, many of us still have the freedom and the resources to speak out for change and to work for change. And I think we have a moral duty to listen to the people who have figured out a way to survive on the edge of that cliff. And I think we have to listen to them. And then I think we have to follow their leadership. And that leadership will lead us into a new land of justice and a new land of freedom. I believe that we can do that. I believe that the people of God are called to do that. We can honor our own sense of loss and frustration. I don't minimize that. It hurts that I can't see my sister. You all have stories that that are painful to you, losses you've encountered. But I think together we can work together to try and create a community where that pain, that loss, that injustice can be minimalized. And not minimalize the people that are experiencing it. In all the days to come, I pray that we will strive to live generously and that we do it because He who is all says it's right. Amen. I love you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. And I look forward to seeing you all again soon. Bye-bye.